Charlie and a few of their friends. Chug a couple beers and talk politics. It's better with your two beers in.
Hey everyone, welcome to Two Beers In, a tipsy political roundtable. I'm Charlie Todd.
I'm Cody Lindquist.
Today's guest is Doug Gordon, a TV writer and producer and noted New York City bicycle advocate. We're already two beers in as we just finished an excellent chat with Doug about bicycle politics.
Hell yeah.
So that conversation is going to be released on the podcast next week. So stay tuned for that. But now that we're good and tipsy after drinking a couple of beers, we're going to chat about the political news of the week. Doug, thanks for getting two beers in with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We just right before just had to look and see if there were any crazy tweets.
Because that's our world now.
It's
we wake up and
like,
that's what we do.
We've been away from Twitter for 30 minutes. We have to check in.
I think
and make
my
sure
wife sometimes, her first words in the morning to me are, what did he say anything?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Yeah.
Oh my God. So it's been a little while since our last show.
It's terrible.
The first words your wife says to
it's
you
terrible.
Are.
It's terrible. We're all
what
in trauma.
What did he say? Yeah. I feel like that's the way too. Yeah. Trump has intervened in our marriage, Charlie.
Well, yeah, he's definitely in bed with us at night as we read Twitter and go to bed.
Yeah.
So it's been a while since our last show, a couple of weeks. Our last show was our live show on the Monday after the inauguration.
We are
and
going
so,
to...
wow, the first couple of working weeks of the Trump administration has been busy.
It's been
That's
exhausting.
A long time. That's like in Trump years. That's like 4 years in
Is
Trump
it two
years.
2 weeks or 3 weeks?
That's maybe a long time.
Weeks.
Yeah.
It feels
three
like,
weeks, right? Over 3 weeks.
It feels like... so many years have gone by. Our son seems older.
So, Doug, before we get into the crazy shit Trump did today and every day for the last few weeks, I wanted to talk about a positive story first and reflect on the Obamas. And I want to ask you about meeting Michelle Obama.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Because that video is amazing. So. Why don't you set up what the segment was, and then I want to hear how you got
involved.
Right.
So I got a Facebook message from Arthur Meyer, who writes for The Tonight Show, who I know through the UCB.
Mm-hmm. Great guy.
Great guy.
Come on our show, Arthur.
Just an awesome guy. And he asked me if I wanted to do this bit. He said, we're going to record regular Americans kind of paying their respects and thanking Michelle Obama and saying what she means to them. And he said, I know you love the Obamas. Would you like to do this? We're going to record something and show it to her with Jimmy later tonight, tomorrow night. It was the day before. I said, yeah, absolutely. So I went there. There are a bunch of other people. They showed us in one by one to the studio, and they had us kind of expressing our love and gratitude to Michelle Obama to a portrait of her.
You're looking at
I'm looking at a huge portrait, like a 4 foot high portrait of her. And I just kind of, they had asked us to prepare a few things, not to quite memorize it, but to have an idea of what we were going to say. And, I thought a lot about, not so much the, when they go low, we go high, but more her message of kindness. Before I went in, one of the writers said, you know, like, can you think of anything specific that she's done that really matters to you? So I, talked about my daughter's salad bar at school because Michelle Obama has this, you know, she had the healthy eating initiative that she's doing. And so I finished and you've seen the video. I thought that what was going to happen was that the producers and the writers were going to be like, okay, that was great. Could you just do that one part again? I work in TV, so I figured they would pick out the parts that they wanted me to do again. And then boom, the curtain opens and there she is. And
She's watching.
She was watching from backstage on a monitor.
Yeah.
And I just, I still think about that moment. It will sustain me probably for the rest of my life. It was really.
At least for the next 4 years.
At least, it was amazing. It was amazing.
That's such
it was
an
amazing.
Oprah moment.
It's funny that you say that because a lot
Jimmy
of people
Fallon
said.
Stole Oprah's shtick.
Yeah. People said, how come you didn't know? Did you know that she was going to be there? And I did not know. I was genuinely surprised.
Did you say I'm the worst television producer
in history?
I know. I
had
like,
no idea what was going on.
Yeah. And I watch Jimmy Fallon every now and then. And you would think, like, yeah, that is the thing, right?
If anyone's going to figure it out, it would be the TV producer who's also in the comedy world.
Right. Like, who's versed in this stuff.
Yeah.
But no, and people said, well, you didn't seem like super surprised because I didn't cry. I didn't jump up and down. I have said to people, I'm not kind of like the Oprah Winfrey audience member screamer. But
you also didn't receive a car. You just.
I got something better than a car.
Kind of the same.
Yeah. No,
sort of the same.
When I left the studio, actually, was when I felt truly shocked. Yeah, it was amazing. It was such a great
moment.
Yeah,
so it's all such a rush, and then you...
I walked outside near Rockefeller Center, and I looked around, and I almost wanted to scream to everybody, like, hey, New York, do you understand what just happened to me? Because I don't understand it. It was amazing.
One thing I am loving right now, the one thing it's giving me, like... love and just happiness, seeing, besides my child, is seeing pictures of Barack Obama and Michelle Obama on vacation.
I saw some headline that said Barack Obama is the only person who's happy that Barack Obama is not president right now. I think that sums it up.
I just feel like they're just like on a honeymoon, just like doing it and just like traveling and having a good time with Richard Branson, apparently. I don't know. It's the best.
We haven't seen Michelle pictures though, right? I mean, they keep showing Obama.
There was one video of both of them kind of walking to the beach or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, she was in her beach gear. I was like, yes.
Well, that's also her probably best experience is not being on camera all the time, as she has been for the last four years.
You know, it's like, this sounds really weird, but seeing like shirtless Obama.
I know, you don't see that very often.
No.
I think the amazing thing is,
it's
right?
Amazing,
like,
he didn't have a cigarette in his mouth.
Right, like he couldn't do that for 8 years because you can't, like, if you love those kind of adventure sports, you can't do that as president.
But you sort of can do anything as president now. You don't have to worry about appearances. Donald Trump has torn all of that away.
I mean, it's
so
funny.
You
like,
know what?
Yeah, right. Like, he could say all this racist stuff. He can do all this terrible stuff, but they would never let him do something dangerous.
Gross.
So,
can you imagine Donald Trump, like, in a fucking outfit?
I've read that he does not take his shirt off, so, you know, who knows? Oh. Maybe Melania has not even seen.
Oh, my
God. I
wouldn't
be surprised if he just walked around and, like, completely bottomless with a white t-shirt.
So I want to talk about just some big picture Trump stuff up top that's on my mind before we get into the outrage of the moment, which is frankly so exhausting. But
it is.
I've said this on the podcast before, the most shocking and alarming things that I think that happened during the campaign were the tiny lies that he told. Like, to me, when he said, I received a letter from the NFL saying they are upset about when the debate scheduled, and then the NFL was like, no, we did not send him a letter. To me, that was scarier than I like to grab women by the pussy, which that's partly my privilege because I'm not a woman. But obviously, that was awful and outrageous and disqualifying and terrible. But I know that person, right? We elected a misogynist. Yeah. We elected a sexual assaulter. Like, that's awful. But to me, and maybe this is a little bit of a hot take, but to me, a person who is mentally insane is a little bit scarier to me than a rapist.
Just, most rapists are probably have mental issues.
Sure.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is, like, someone who is able just to say that the sky is pink when the sky is blue, who knows? Like it's just so a pathological liar in the White House to me, I think, is DEFCON 5. We all need to freak out.
And part of the reason this is relevant today is because this weekend Bernie Sanders was on Meet the Press, I believe.
No, he was on CNN, I think.
He's probably on a lot of shows, but
he's come out right and said Trump is a pathological liar.
More and more people are starting to come
out. Which he is, but do you think that's helpful? Do you think? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's helpful. I mean, Al Franken, right? He got on TV and talked about Trump's mental state, that in private Republicans are saying to him they don't think that he's right in the head, I think were his words. So I do think it's helpful. I mean, you know, I think we all are accustomed to politicians lying. But we tend to forgive...
Different kind of lies.
Right. Now. We tend to forgive them certain lies, like not telling the whole truth or using different definitions for the word is. But we don't necessarily expect them to lie about verifiable things, like whether or not they got a letter from the NFL explaining that they're upset about the debate. About the debate schedule. Like, it's a verifiable thing
but
people are lying
about. Easily verifiable.
Yes,
this week again, he lied... about millions of people illegally voting.
Thousands of people,
which is completely
from Massachusetts.
False. It's a lie.
Taking buses to New Hampshire to vote against him and against Kelly Ayotte for Senate. As if
Kelly lost, right?
She lost. Yeah. As if people wouldn't notice. I think someone did the math that would be like 20, 40 buses full of people. Like, wouldn't you yeah. notice that going?
But do you think it's too little too late? And here's my argument or whatever. I feel like the media has, very few people in the media have come out and actually said Trump lied. They say provable falsehoods. They dance around, right? No one says Trump lied about this.
Yeah, and it bothered me on Meet the Press when Bernie said he's a pathological liar, and Chuck was like, you know, kind of clutched his pearls and said, those are strong words. Those are really strong words. It's like, yeah, they're strong words that you need to be using, Chuck,
right.
That all Americans need to be using, because it's not... Obviously, Chuck Todd is a middle of the road journalist who doesn't take sides, and that's his job to not take sides and ask tough questions on both sides. But when someone is saying the sky is pink when the sky is blue, like it's not taking a side to be like, he is a liar.
I think the media gets really worried about trying to get into the head of people. So they feel like, well, we don't know his intent. So is that a lie if we can't say whether or not he meant to spread a falsehood? Does he really believe?
But how could you believe you received a letter from the NFL? How could you believe, you know, how can you say that you sent investigators to Hawaii and they're finding incredible things about Obama's birth certificate?
Right, exactly.
Like, there's nothing.
Yeah, but this is how Sean Spicer defends it, right? He says, well, those are Mr. Trump's or President Trump's beliefs. So then it becomes into this religion thing, right?
Therefore, like, he is an insane.
If my religion tells me that I'm the most beautiful person that's ever walked the earth and every person wants to have sex with me every day, do I believe that? And then do I
that
say that's my religion?
That might be very good for your confidence. Yeah,
that's like, that's my religion?
But that's not scary to me. If Trump, I mean, I know that he has a huge ego.
You mean
I know he has
saying,
a huge ego. I know that he thinks that everybody wants to fuck him.
It's not the same as me being like, I believe that I am a 7-foot-tall black man that plays on the...
That's not true.
But that just that makes you an insane person. He is the president of the United States. So if he's going to lie about that, what else is he going to lie about? Yeah. That is the thing that
I
think,
I've heard people saying that he can't be crazy because he is the president of the United States.
Yeah, that's crazy.
If that is the circular argument. I'm like, he's not crazy. He's the president of the United States.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I think, like, there are people who are shoplifters. They want to get caught, right? I mean, that's like a thing, right? There's certain people who pathologically certain crimes because of the thrill of getting caught. And I just, like, why? You can be a liar. You can be a terrible person. I mean, Mitch McConnell's a fucking liar. I mean, he's a piece of shit.
Yes, he knows he's lying.
Horrible,
he knows
spineless
he's lying.
Person
yes.
who knows he's lying, but he bends the truth in his way and says, well, Joe Biden
did Paul this. Ryan, too. He knows he's lying.
Joe Biden did the Biden role 30 years ago. Therefore, I could be a giant cock. But Trump is just flat out saying, I saw on TV there were Muslims celebrating in Jersey City on 9/11. Just straight.
And I think it's fine to call it a lie if the first time he says it, maybe you can't call it a lie because maybe he saw something and whatever, he's mistaken.
He saw an InfoWars post.
Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. But once it's pointed out and pointed out again and pointed out again and you still repeat it, I think then we probably do enter into territory where the press can say, you know, Mr. Trump, we believe that you're lying about this because you've had ample opportunity to be educated about why this is incorrect.
But
you still say it.
Do you think that the media has screwed up and that they have not called him a liar for years now at this point, right? And he has jumped ahead of them and said that they're crooked, that they don't support him, that they're fake news. So at this point, has he already convinced people that no matter what the media says, even if they call me a liar, it's because they don't like me and because...
I mean, I don't know, because the New York Times subscriptions are way up, Washington Post subscription is way up. So in surveys and polls, I think you do hear people say that they don't trust the media, but people's individual habits may suggest that they do. They just... You know, when I say I don't trust the media, that probably means I don't watch a lot of cable news, but I do read the Washington Post, I do seek out sources online that I know are reputable.
Right.
So, yeah, maybe everybody has a different definition of, like, what fake news is.
I mean, I'm trying to figure out how we can win Trump voters back over, and I'm, I don't do a good job at it. I mean, if I encounter a Trump voter, my line of attack is, you voted for someone with narcissistic personality disorder who is dangerous, pathological liar, because that's what
I... Yeah, but that's too much out of the gate.
Yeah.
But it's hard because that person's like, well, I voted for that person, and if all those things are true, then I'm a fool.
Yeah, so, it's hard for people to admit that maybe they made a mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know. I think sometimes the focus on Trump voters may be misplaced because what Democrats need to do is activate the people who stayed home.
Right.
You know, activate the
just
younger 10, people.
10,000 people in Michigan.
Right. It's not that many people. And activate the young people who didn't vote or people who felt that they didn't like or trust Hillary. I liked Hillary a lot and didn't buy into a lot of the media narrative about her. But, you know, when you remove Hillary from the story, it's not a coincidence now that Trump's approval ratings are going down. The perception of his honesty is going down because he doesn't have someone else to point to and say, right. Hey, look at her. She's the liar. She's the terrible
people.
One. Right. She's the murderer. She, the emails. It's like, no, she's gone now. You won. Okay, fine. It's just you. And
there
are
a lot of people that I know, from growing up in Ohio that voted for Trump, not because they liked him, but because they hated Hillary.
Yes.
Fine. Great. I don't agree with that, but sure, whatever. But I feel like some of this rhetoric that we have is pushing those people further and further towards Trump by coming out of the gate and just being like, he's lying and he's crazy and you're crazy for voting for him. It's making them like sort of resist in a way and double down, even though maybe these people could be convinced through more honey than...
I think it just has to be pointing out the hypocrisy that he said he was going to drain the swamp, and tonight Steve Mnuchin got confirmed. And Steve Mnuchin said he's going to fill all the positions in his under his purview with people from Goldman Sachs and Bear Stearns.
Yeah,
and,
I think that's it. Know. I think like sunlight being the best disinfectant. Like these guys are just going to take off their Goldman Sachs hats and put on their White House hats. Like that's
Make America Great Again.
They're Make America Great Again hats. Yeah, and I think showing that, and you know, you don't want people to get hurt. I don't buy into the like, well, when these Trump voters like lose their jobs and more factories close, like you don't want that for anybody, but it is very possible that that will be a consequence.
Right.
And when that starts to happen, hopefully people will see that they were kind of sold a bill of goods.
But it's difficult, right? Because as people that are paying attention to the media and paying attention to what his minions are saying, Stephen Miller, a good example, he was on... he was on all of the news shows this weekend, and he's his advisor. He's this young guy from, he went to Duke, I guess.
Yeah, 31 years old.
31.
Went to Duke.
Looks like a
California.
Serial killer. He outright lied several times, but he also made a lot of crazy authoritarian comments. one comment that he said was, the end result of this, though, is that our opponents, the media, and the whole world will soon see as we begin to take further actions that the powers of the president to protect our country are very substantial and will not be questioned.
I mean, that sounds like a monologue like Magneto would give.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's like terrible. It's like a villain.
The Emperor from Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely.
You will not question my power.
Yeah,
so
it's really ridiculous.
Crazy than to go to a Trump supporter and be like, hey, let's talk. You want to be like, oh my God.
These people are crazy.
The world is on fire.
I'm fascinated by Stephen Miller and Jared Kushner because I'm Jewish.
Stephen Miller's Jewish.
These guys are Jewish.
But Stephen Miller, had some content. I think it's a little bit disputed, but like Richard Spencer, the alt-right guy with the cute haircut.
They knew each other at Duke, apparently.
They were like buddies at Duke, or Spencer was a grad student and Stephen Miller like, you know, arranged for him to give a talk or something. But he's Jewish.
Yeah,
well,
and Jared
his
Kushner.
His parents are liberal.
Right.
Stephen Miller's parents. This is my nightmare, is that my son one day will be like...
like Alex P. Keaton. He'll be, right, yeah.
Our son at dinner tonight literally looked at us and said, do you like Trump?
And then I was like...
kind of unprovoked. I mean, he's 2.5.
That's amazing.
I was like, you know, Charles, we don't like his policies, but that's what's great about being an American. If you... you know, I was trying to be like diplomatic. And he goes, you don't like Trump? And he goes, I like Trump. Like to be contrary to what we said.
Yeah, he doesn't even understand how he
is. And then I was like, okay, we're changing the subject. I was trying to give a very nuanced answer to your question, and you clearly don't get it.
No, but to your point, so you're Jewish.
Yeah.
And Jared Kushner's Jewish, and Ivanka converted to being Jewish.
Right.
Yeah, what's...
I'm trying to wrap my head around that. I mean, I'm Jewish, but I don't believe in God, but I grew up, I was bar mitzvahed.
Culturally Jewish.
Right, you know, I'm like culturally Jewish, exactly. But I'm fascinated by these guys who have latched onto this like authoritarian, like Steve Bannon's vision of the world doesn't include a lot of Jewish people probably. Yeah. So it's very strange to me that they have latched on in this way. And it strikes me as there's just so much more going on psychologically in their development, in their relationship with their families.
Well, they probably forgot that the Jews were killed in the Holocaust because
Jared
the president
Kushner's
doesn't mention it.
Jared Kushner's grandparents are Holocaust survivors.
Well, they should have been in that tweet on Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's
insane. It's like,
insane
if we just don't
me.
Tweet about it, no one will remember that the Jews were targeted.
It's literally the All Lives Matter of Holocaust Remembrance statements.
That is
basically.
What
that's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that Ivanka and Jared would have been able to put down, a veto on Bannon. Right?
Well, see, I actually think that there's this weird bias at play with Ivanka and Jared, right? So Don Jr. and Eric, everybody thinks they're douchebags because they look like douchebags and they talk like douchebags, right? Ivanka and Jared come across as very poised, very polished. They're very well dressed. They're very attractive.
Jared doesn't slick his hair back.
He doesn't slick his hair back, which if you don't want to be seen as a villain, just lay off the pomade, right? And I think that it's like, so why do we think that Ivanka is somehow appreciably different than her brothers? Because she's good looking, because
she's
she dresses well. And I think there's like a beauty bias at play. I think, like, the simplest explanation being the most correct one, she probably believes this stuff, too. She probably has... She was raised by her father, so as much as you can be raised by a man who doesn't really raise his children.
But she doesn't take elevators on Saturday. It seems like she's incompatible with Steve Bannon.
Right, yes. She's... Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. I think we're giving them too much credit and we're putting too much hope in them, but I think people are doing it because they're like, well, maybe she's playing along.
It's their only hope.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, hope is. But you know, it's either what you're saying is that she probably believes it, or she has literally no power and authority over what her dad does.
Right. Right.
So, and she's doing this because she has, you know,
There was the rumor that she and Jared kind of put the kibosh on any sort of change to the LGBT.
There was maybe going to be an executive order.
There was going to maybe be an executive order that they
were
right.
Like,
and so what I had commented was like, well, basically what this tells me is that they know gay people, right? But they don't know Mexicans. They don't know that many Muslims. And they certainly don't know any refugees.
But they know Jewish people for sure.
Right. Yeah. No, it's really mind-boggling.
So why is the alt-right have a,
it's mind
well, and I feel like Steve Bannon keeps them around so that he can use the cover and be like, this guy's Jewish and he's around.
Yeah, racists do that, right? Oh, you know, yeah, you're black, but you're not like all the rest
they
of
them.
Do. Racists do that all the time.
Like Ben Carson's. Ben Carson's not one of them. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. You're one of the good ones.
So
I have a question about just security and what this is kind of a tough question. Do you guys think that Hillary's private email server was more or less secure than Trump's Android phone in the middle of a country club with 50 people watching?
It depends. Was the light on his phone on or off? I mean, that is insane, right?
Yeah.
It just shows the hypocrisy of the right, that they don't care about this stuff. He's literally getting phone calls about North Korea testing a missile while he's having dinner with the Japanese prime minister, and it's like all the phones come out.
Some rando, well-to-do Floridian is like Snapchatting the entire experience.
Yeah,
you know, I spent a good part of my 20s as a waiter, and I feel like I could have sold a lot of secrets if I were a waiter at Mar-a-Lago.
Honestly, a waiter won the 2012 election for Obama, right? I mean, the waiter that taped the 47%
Romney. So if you're ISIS, basically, like, fill out a fake resume, apply online at whatever Trump.com.
Under minimum wage.
Right. And you too can serve a wedge salad to the leader of the free world and learn all sorts of top secret information.
You might have to recruit a non-Muslim person because I don't think they hire Muslims at Mar-a-Lago.
That is true. Change your name.
You're Italian.
Yeah.
It's the same. They all look, you know.
We wanted to talk.
That's not how I wanted it to sound, by the way. I'm going to retract that comment.
We wanted to talk about.
I was using that as an example of what somebody would say.
We know. We wanted to talk about Mar-a-Lago in general.
The Winter White House.
The Winter White House, and like it's
that's such bull. It's
like,
crazy.
I mean,
right?
What if like George Bush's Crawford Ranch? Like, what if you paid $200,000, you could just like hang out there when he was there? Like that would have been.
I mean, it's like two things. First of all, like right, they call it the Winter White House, but we already have a Winter White House. It's called the White House, right? Like that's the White House.
It's not that cold in D.C.
It's not that cold in D.C.
It's not Chicago.
And we've got Camp David and other places that presidents historically have gone. Yeah, and exactly. Like, the Crawford Ranch or, you know, Reagan's Ranch in California, these weren't places where you or I, if we had $200,000, could
you couldn't, like,
hand it over and, like, get an audience
at
with a
Crawford Ranch.
No, yeah, like, you can't have your bar mitzvah at Crawford Ranch.
I mean, there was a dude last night who's, like, taking selfies with the guy that has the nuclear football. You know, I mean,
it's like, shouldn't we not know who has that? Don't we not want a picture of that person?
You probably don't want a smiling picture of him on Instagram. Certainly not. Yeah,
it's crazy to me that on the internet you see all of these things and they're tagged. You can like tag Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, and then I think Trump even himself said, I guess there was a wedding next door.
Yeah.
To like in the, you know, the next event space over from the dining room, and he went over there and gave some toast to the bride and groom, and when asked about it said, well, they're paying me, he said, me a lot of money.
He literally said, like, they've paid me tons of money.
That's crazy.
Can you imagine too if you were like the prime minister of another country and you were so excited because you'd just been elected and you wanted to go to the White House for the first time, and you got stuck going to like fucking Holiday Inn Gold in Florida. You're like, I have to go to this piece of shit. I wanted to sleep in the Lincoln bedroom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're not staying here. We're getting on Marine One, and
sucks.
Yeah,
that's a good point. So you mentioned that, you know, just the Republican outrage at the tiniest thing that Obama did versus, you know, the things that Trump's doing. That's every single thing Trump has done in the last three weeks, or at least every single mildly controversial to very controversial thing. If you replaced Trump did with Obama did, I mean, it would have been like...
He would have been impeached 10 times over.
Or Hillary. I mean, could you imagine...
Hillary would not have survived her first day in office if she had been doing these things. She would... Jason Chaffetz from Utah, right? He would have called her before the House Ethics Committee, and she would have been impeached within days.
So part of that is that the Republicans are in control of Congress.
Yeah.
And for... Six of Obama. How many years did the Republicans have the House under Obama?
Well, he only had Democratic majority for like 2 years, right?
Yeah. And then the Senate maybe for four, and then the House for six. And the House for two, and then the Republicans had it for six. So that's part of it. But other than that, like, why is it that a Democratic president could not? Is it Trump specifically, or is it that a Republican get away with more than a Democrat could?
I think Republicans are... Democrats are playing checkers and Republicans have just torched the board. You know, they just were playing different games. And
They're not playing like super smart chess. They just literally set the board on fire.
Yeah, basically.
They're not playing by any rules.
There are no rules. They've just abandoned. It's a pursuit of power. Mitch McConnell only cares about power. Paul Ryan only cares about cutting taxes and ending Obamacare.
So follow up. Why is that? Why? Help me understand why Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and their ilk care so deeply about tax cuts for the wealthy that they're willing to let a person with a personality disorder be in the White House.
Have you read The Fountainhead?
I read The Fountainhead.
Yeah, I read The Fountainhead in high school, but it didn't.
So it's just the bootstraps thing. It's just that poor people suck and they should pull themselves up.
Maybe, but like I read it in high school, but it didn't like stop my development at that stage and then cause me to like subscribe to that political philosophy for the rest of my life. It's just another book that I read, and it's not that great.
But I do think if you really believe in that political philosophy, like I think Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan have two separate.
Yes,
Paul definitely. Reasons. I guess that excuses him is that he read The Fountainhead and jerked off at every page, and he's still
cemented.
It's still in his spank bank forever.
Yeah.
No, but it's true. If you think that poor people are predators who are sucking off the teat of the rest of the world, and that the only way to make them better is to release them from that and let them fall on their own. I mean, if you really believe that, then of course you want no safety net, because you feel like people eventually will either die or rise up and let them fall with nothing to catch them. Now, Mitch McConnell, I think, is like an old piece of shit that's been around for a long time, and he's playing the little like political game, right?
Did you see the picture that like the Kentucky Democrats tweeted out? They tweeted out like it was like KY Dems or something like that. They tweeted out, we're just going to leave this here. And it was a picture of Mitch McConnell, clearly from like the 80s,
with the
early 90s, with a Confederate flag in the background, accepting some award from some group.
Oh, wow.
He had a plaque or something. He was
I don't know. Charlie's from the South. You might have a picture of you by a Confederate flag.
So, yeah, I think it is a different thing. I think for Mitch McConnell, like maybe there
maybe
is.
Accidentally.
Yeah, maybe it is.
In the state house, something.
Right. I think for Mitch McConnell, maybe it is just like, you know, Obama becomes president, and from right out of the gate, we're going to make him a one-term president.
Are you saying because he's racist?
Yeah, I think there's an element of race going on there. With Paul Ryan, I don't know if it's racism. I think it's just this sort of bankrupt political philosophy of Ayn Randism.
I also think it's this naivete that they think they can control Trump.
Yes.
That they think he's...
Well, they kind of can. He puts his signature on things he doesn't read.
Right, right? But he's up... It is this... We have this man that's in charge of the White House that has no morals, no scruples, no opinions, that's really an empty vessel. And you've got all these fucking pigs at the trough feeding and trying to see who could eat all the pig feed. That's a great metaphor.
It is a good, yes.
Tweet it out.
Pig feed.
But you know what I mean? Who can influence this person first? And can we, I think, honestly... I mean, I don't know. This is just an opinion based on no fact, but that's in the society we live in now. So I'll say
that's as legitimate as anything else right now.
This is basically what the president thinks. I think that they're hoping that they can get all of their shit done in the next year or two before they lose Congress.
Before the midterms.
If they lose Congress, right. Who knows? But they're like, let's get all of our shit passed. And then if he fucks up or does anything to cross us, we'll impeach him and we'll get him out and we'll have Pence.
Well, what's crazy is they're kind of doing it backwards, right? Like they have a complete hold on government right now. They've got, basically, they're going to have all three branches before very long. And instead of working on a legislative package that the president can sign, the president is instead issuing these, like, total mumbled, jumbled executive orders that are causing chaos. If you think about what Obama did when he had a majority in Congress. Got the stimulus done because they had to save the economy. Eventually gets Obamacare passed. Like, they worked on they worked on laws that they could pass with Congress. And it wasn't until he got completely... just totally roadblocked by the Republican majority that he starts having to rely on executive orders.
Right.
Trump's got everything and there's no legislative plan.
Right.
Why are we doing executive orders right now?
Because they have chaos in their party.
Right.
The Tea Party and
they can
Paul
all
Ryan,
agree
they
that
can't.
They hate immigrants, right? They just get it done, right? They all hate immigrants.
No, actually not. Marco Rubio and a lot of those moderate people were for... immigration
but
reform.
I think maybe the bigger problem...
Marco will go with the flow, but all right.
I think the bigger problem is the Republicans are the dog that caught the car, and they just don't know what to do with it.
Well, particularly
it,
with
right?
Obamacare.
Oh, absolutely.
I want to talk about Obamacare. Yeah. What do you think is going to happen? I mean, it seems like... I mean, I thought like day two they were going to repeal it, but it seems like people are showing up at town halls, and they're saying like, oh, actually, I have... cancer, and I'm going to die if you do this.
Yeah,
they've all been paid by George Soros.
Yeah. Did you get your check? Because I've been to a few rallies.
Guys, we're putting our kid through college with that money.
I went to the women's
good
march.
Money.
The best part about going to the women's march and the George Soros checks is the residuals. Every time cable news airs footage, you get a check in the mail.
Even if we're not in the picture.
Yeah, I mean, I expense my poster board and markers and stuff like that, so it's pretty good.
So what do you think is going to happen with Obamacare?
I mean, I can't see it going anywhere, right? Like, I think those stories, I think you're going to get tax cuts for the rich. I think you're going to see, like, complete deregulation of every industry that you can possibly
imagine.
Because
there's not public outrage about tax cuts.
It's harder, right? It's harder to muster the specific outrage. But, yeah, if you have stories about, well, I'm alive today because I got Obamacare, or my kid has a pre-existing condition and is 25 years old and would never be able to afford insurance if they weren't on my plan... then, yeah, you can't beat those sort of anecdotes and those personal stories. So it's hard to see how Obamacare is going to go away. That's not to say, you know, anything's possible in this brave new world. But, they don't have a plan. They've had, 7 years to figure it out, and they don't
because
have
one. Because there is no way to keep the things that people like.
A replacement for Obamacare is Obamacare.
Right.
Or
right. Well, Obamacare is a replacement for, like, the Democrats' vision of single payer or public option. Obamacare is Romney Care, is the Heritage Foundation, is a Republican idea.
Yeah.
So they spit in the face of a Republican idea for 7 years, and now they're like, oh, shit, we got to come up with something
that's popular, too. Yeah. Right. They're not going to be able to do it.
I want to shift this a little bit, because last week Trump attacked the entire judicial branch.
The basically, so-called judicial
yeah,
branch.
Yeah, by saying the so-called judge came up, you know, against his immigration ban. And, you know, people are outraged by this on both sides, and rightfully so. But today I was watching Chuck Schumer. He was on MSNBC, I think, being interviewed. And he said he used the term activist judges, and he said legislating from the bench, in reference to Citizens United, which I agree was a terrible ruling. But I want to make the argument that I think what Trump is saying is about the judiciary is terrible, but it's also been this foundation that has been laid for years and years and years by both parties.
I disagree. I think there's a big difference between saying this judge is an activist, this judge is legislating from the bench, and this judge might not be a judge. And maybe we don't need to listen to judges.
Let me finish.
Trump is questioning the entire judicial branch. He's questioning their existence and their relevance and their power versus saying, like, I don't like what this.
But I get what you're saying.
But it's not the same thing.
I get what you're saying.
Exactly. Because
right?
It's like not the same thing as Obama saying, I don't like his ruling, but we will abide by it.
But I also think the whole notion of activist judge is just silly, right? To me, an activist judge is a judge who I don't agree with.
Exactly.
Right?
And both sides.
And both sides do that. So
exactly.
We should just, like, to quote Marco Rubio, like, dispense with this notion, right? We should just admit that we want judges for the Supreme Court, for district courts, that agree with the types of rulings that we might want them to lay down. Now, when it comes to judiciary independence, I personally think probably no fan of Scalia, but you could probably have 9 Scalias on the Supreme Court, and every single one of them would think, yes, the judiciary branch should be completely separate and independent from the executive branch. So Trump definitely stepped into a hornet's nest here, because the guy he was criticizing as a so-called judge is a George W. Bush appointee.
Right.
So it's not like it's some, you know, huge liberal who is like, who's giving abortions in his chambers or something like that. He is like,
judges do that now?
It's, you know, brave.
In New York,
like, anything's possible here. But you know what I mean? Like, it's not like this guy was some liberal judge who was appointed by Obama or Bill Clinton. The judges are independent.
But my point is, I feel like, listen, Trump has said some terrible, crazy, awful things, but he is like a toddler that repeats the words you're saying but heightens them, right? And so it wouldn't be so easy for Trump to be like this so-called judge if for years both the left and the right were saying activist judge and legislate from the bench. I think that kind of rhetoric, rather than being like, I completely disagree with that, what that person says. What they were tipping their hat at is they were going above what their job is. And no, they weren't. They were giving an opinion that I don't agree with.
It just seems that the Trump and Miller and all of them don't think that judges should have any power.
I agree, but don't you think that's
a step too far?
That's a step too far,
but I feel like they were laying the groundwork from it by saying, you're an activist, you're not doing your job, which is to interpret the Constitution,
which is what they think they're doing. But that is also sometimes true. I mean, to legislate that corporations are people and that therefore they need free speech is an activist.
Right, like John Roberts has been working on gutting the Voting Rights Act since he was working for Ronald Reagan, and he finally got a chance to do it from the bench. So, like, I agree
with his legislation, but his job is to interpret it the way he sees it.
Yes.
And that's the way he sees it.
What we're saying is that we're right and he's wrong.
Yes.
Oh, wait, what?
Right.
Anyway, I just feel like we've all been saying this shit for a long time, and now Trump's, like, taking it and blowing it up.
Speaking of someone who's wrong, I wanted to briefly bring up our old friend Jim Webb, who I think he asked most people who Jim Webb was right now. No one would remember.
They're like, my music teacher from eighth grade?
He was the angry guy in the first couple of Democratic debates with Hillary and
Bernie.
He's a veteran
and a former governor of
Virginia, right?
I think he might be a former senator from Virginia.
Yes,
maybe he was governor. I can't remember.
I'm going to Google it right now, guys.
So Jim Webb, sensibly a Democrat, he was running for the Democratic nomination for president versus Lincoln, Chafee, Bernie, and Hillary. But he was on Meet the Press this weekend for some reason. I'm not sure. And Chuck Todd asked him who he voted for.
Senator from Virginia.
Yeah. And he would not commit to saying he voted for Hillary. He wouldn't say who he voted for. And Chuck even pressed him and said, like, well, your buddy's with Tim Kaine. You must have voted for Tim Kaine's ticket. And he said, I voted for Tim Kaine as a senator, but my vote is private on the presidential election.
It's so funny to me when people talk about my vote is private, like that's written in the Constitution. The Constitution, you know, your right to vote means that, like, the state can't look over your shoulder as you're voting. But there's nothing in there that says, like, you're not allowed to tell anybody.
Yeah.
Like, you are allowed to tell people. Yeah, real courageous act to not say who you voted for.
I don't know. I have no question here. I just wanted on the record to say.
Why is Jim Webb on any television show at this
guy's
point?
A piece of shit. Why was he running as a Democrat? He's not a Democrat.
He's the Joe Lieberman of 2017.
Oh, God. I don't want to talk about Joe Lieberman.
Who ruined Obamacare. So it's award season right now.
Yeah.
And it feels like every part of our lives is completely dominated by politics. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be, because I believe that when there's a fascist dictator in the White House, you can't just sit back and be like, thank you so much for my Grammy. I really appreciate that. I worked really hard. But I wonder, do you think that celebrities coming out and giving speeches against Trump is helping the cause, or do you think it's hurting the cause?
I think it didn't help in the election, right? Like Lena Dunham coming out and talk, I don't think that helped very much.
Well, she's someone who really speaks to middle America.
Right, exactly. I don't think that was the message.
But it doesn't hurt. I mean, it doesn't hurt. Good for her. She should do that.
Yeah, and that's her. And that's her right.
Do you think it hurts?
I think it hurts with people it would probably hurt with anyway. Right, like she's not going to convince anybody who's probably not inclined to support Hillary in the first place. But I do think it helps, because what happened when Meryl Streep spoke at the Golden Globes, like, it caused a complete meltdown by Trump. Right. And so the more you can show, look, you are reading some stories, despite the diehard Trump supporters, that some of them thought he would be more presidential once he was sworn in. And some of them are saying, God, enough with the tweeting. Come on. Why are you picking fights with all these people? So, yeah, if Meryl Streep gives a very passionate and great speech about bullies and about democracy, and then he's tweeting the next night or that night or the next morning. I do think that ultimately helps, because I'll say this. Hillary Clinton made a lot of mistakes during the campaign. We've all gone through them. But the one thing she did expertly was the debates. She's like, psychological operations that like the CIA couldn't come up with. Mm-hmm. She destroyed him, right? The Alicia Machado thing, that whole
thing. Where did you come up with that?
Exactly. She totally unnerved him. And what I think Democrats are not doing enough of is using that, like, basic fact that Trump wants to be beloved and just liked by everybody. And so when Hollywood comes out against him, like, that's all this guy has ever wanted. But who will do the Celebrity Apprentice? Like, a bunch of, like, C-listers. And so... Mm-hmm.
Piers Morgan.
Who will appear at his inauguration? Nobody. So I think the psychological aspect of, like, make this guy feel like a loser, because it's the only thing he's ever wanted for his whole life is to feel like a winner.
But what does that get us?
I think it exposes how unfit he is to be president.
So it will either gain us, like, more insane tweets, which will cause him to lose favor with people who are kind of on the fence, or nuclear war with Korea.
Or he drops a bomb on the Oscars, right? Like, yeah, I do think that's it, right? Like, his poll numbers are going down because you take away Hillary and it's just like a
bright
light.
Did you not hear that all the polls that are bad are fake?
Oh, that's right. Only the good polls are real.
I think we got to wrap it up.
We do.
This has been great. We also had a fantastic conversation with Doug earlier tonight about bicycle politics.
And we're super inside baseball, but we are moving towards coming out with some more podcasts.
Yeah, we want to release more regularly, and we don't necessarily want to get drunk every week. So
we also want to focus on more local local issues and things that
are just drilling down
important to us.
We want to drill down on particular issues and not just talk about Trump every single week. So next week on the feed here on our podcast, we'll have a great conversation with Doug. And I know it's great because we already had it about cycling and New York City local politics around cycling. That was really illuminating.
Tomorrow's Valentine's Day. Did you guys buy your wives anything?
I already got you flowers, Cody.
My wife and I, we have made it a thing not to really do Valentine's Day, but we buy a Whitman sampler chocolate thing, and then we share it. And we've done that every year for like 15 years.
That's actually really great.
Yeah, it's fun.
I really want, I've been wanting like a heart-shaped ring from Zales.
Well, I better
Whitman sampler, a lot cheaper.
I better head out and buy that.
$7.99.
We're not sponsored by Zales, but if Zales wants to sponsor us, we'll take it.
Or the Whitman's company.
So subscribe to the podcast. Tune in next week for our part two of our conversation with Doug. And in 2 weeks, we have a live show at the UCB Theater, and that would be February 27th at 8 p.m. So buy tickets to that if you live in New York City. Otherwise, just subscribe. And don't forget to vote in midterm elections. Thanks so much, everybody.
Bye.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.